It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you for being with me on this Sunday morning as we roll through the middle of October. And yesterday morning in Illinois, at least, opened in the northern zone the long-awaited 2019 duck season, which is always in the upper Illinois River a historic event going back, well, many, many generations now, the Illinois River being one historically and in legend, one of the greatest places to hunt waterfowl on all the earth. And for the northern zone of the state to open, lots of cars were heading south from Chicago and Rockford Friday afternoon, headed to favored and longtime sought-out haunts on the upper Illinois. And this is going to be a year, wherever you are in the Mississippi and Central Flyways, this is going to be a different year. The massive spring flooding that we had caused several million acres of cropland not to be planted. It caused the river bottoms of the Missouri and the Illinois and the Mississippi and the Wabash and the Des Moines and all these rivers that through which clouds of waterfowl funnel through to not be planted in any kind of crops, whether they be for wildlife or for commercial production. So we have a year in that the amount of hot foods, if you will, corn and other commodities, is going to be very much absent. And in its place, we're going to have a lot of moist soil plants, which I know a lot of waterfowl biologists and wetlands biologists really believe that waterfowl and migratory birds really seek out wetland plants. We're going to find out if that's the case. My experience and those of people that I've been with a long time are that, yes, when the weather's mild, moist soil plants are highly favored by migrating waterfowl and migrating birds, but that once the weather turns a little bit tougher, they look for the carbohydrates and the energy that you get from corn, and the corn is not going to be there. So we'll see what happens, but I think at least the early indication is that Illinois should have, and so should the other areas of the mid-latitude, a pretty good number of birds for the first part of the season because of the tough weather on the prairies. It's the blizzard that took place. Plus, there is so much smartweed and natural vegetation that at least on the time being, there should be plenty of food. That the time will tell whether or not that holds out for the rest of the fall. So with that said, I'm going to switch to a couple things that I think are really interesting as far as the public and the administration and Congress coming together to provide opportunity for people who want to go outdoors and hunt or fish. And for a long time, we saw a direction in which our refuges and public lands were being closed to hunting, and that is now changing. The Trump administration, and I always preface this by saying this is not a political statement, but this is the fact that one of their priorities beginning now 3 years ago was to reverse a growing trend of closing off public lands to hunting and fishing opportunities. And Secretary of the Interior David Bernhardt has recently expanded access for hunters and anglers across lands managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service. Many of these lands have been closed either forever to hunting and fishing or they were very restrictive. It's beginning to now take place across the country. This year, seven significant areas have been opened up for public access that were closed to public access. And I think we're going to see this on an expanded basis over the coming years with military bases, which own huge amounts of land in the southeast and also in the west being opened up for hunting and fishing, and also areas of refuges being opened up for hunting and fishing. But in the Midwest alone, we are seeing a couple of key areas which had been closed to hunting and fishing for a long time, opened up. And one of the first one is the Green Bay National Wildlife Refuge, which is in Wisconsin. It's a series of islands which extends off the tip of Door County, which provide great habitat, but have but would be open to hunting and fishing for the very first time. Plum Island, U.S. Coast Guard facility, will have shore-only fishing. Deer hunting could be expanded on part of Detroit Island. You go down the list of places, the National Wildlife Refuge, the Siskiyou in Wyoming, is going to be opened. The Hunting and Fishing St. Mark's Wildlife Refuge in Florida is going to be open to upland bird hunting and much more expanded freshwater fishing access. Here in Illinois, the Great River National Wildlife Refuge, which extends for 120 miles along the Mississippi River, will have expanded season dates for turkey, deer, and other upland game hunting. Waterfowl hunting will still take place where it always has there. So it is a really, it's a really wonderful move, frankly, to open up some of our public lands in a wise use, properly managed way to provide opportunity. And it reverses, frankly, almost now a generation of locking it up and throw away the key. And you've heard me speak about this over the years many, many times. The public lands that are in the public trust are to be used by the public. And that's my firm view, and I think it was the firm view of Teddy Roosevelt, who created so much of our national park system and fought so hard for public lands. And I don't think that view has changed among many of us, but what has changed is a buy them, lock them up, and throw away the key mentality of these are our public lands, these are our treasures. They can't possibly be enjoyed by the American people because, after all, we'll destroy them, we'll abuse them. And we saw that just happening over and over and over again over the last 20 years. Areas that were open to hunting and fishing being closed to hunting and fishing, arbitrarily fishing refuges being created off our coasts, arbitrarily areas being closed to hunting. And the one thing we know that will bring an end to hunting and fishing faster than anything else is a lack of access. So with literally just hundreds of millions of acres of public lands in the lower 48, not including Alaska, and in a state like Illinois where we have very, very limited public lands, the need for them to be used for recreation is not only very apparent, it's very important. And the preservationists, as I think really we have to, there's a difference between conservation and preservation. Conservation being the wise use of our natural resources and the proper stewardship, and preservation being we've got it, don't touch it. And I think we finally are seeing in Washington a move back to conservation and away from preservation. We've preserved lots of things. Lots of great areas have been secured. But without our ability as Americans to enjoy these areas properly managed, why do we do it? Why other than to say we've got, you know, 10 million acres in Wisconsin of great national forests or whatever the acreage is, but you can't touch them. They're there, but you can't hunt and fish in them because, after all, they need to be preserved, has been the mindset of a real agenda-driven group in Washington, D.C., and in the state houses of many states. And now it is changing, and it is changing in a hurry. And Secretary of Interior Bernhardt is really to be congratulated, I think, for saying, wait a minute, we're going to reverse the arbitrary closing of access to people, the American taxpayer who paid the bills so we could acquire these areas. We understand many of them are very significant ecologically, and we don't want to destroy that. We actually want to enhance it, and we believe that if people have the opportunity to go and explore and experience these areas, they'll be more inclined to want to preserve them in the future. But if we just tell them it's off limits, you can't go there, put a fence around it, or issue a regulation. If it's an island, you can't go there. I'm sorry, you can't set foot on it. No, you can't deer hunt, and actually you can't fish here. We are a society closing off our own natural resources to ourselves. And that, in my view, at least went on for far too long. It's been a mantra that goes back to actually the Clinton administration when I think it's fair to say a series of directors of the Fish and Wildlife Service came in who had no experience in the outdoor world, hunting and fishing. They became directors of the Fish and Wildlife Service. They didn't hunt. They didn't fish. And they fundamentally changed the way we were managing our natural resources. So it started almost 30 years ago, not quite that long, but pretty close. And we have seen a weakening throughout administrations, Republican and Democrat, of the ability to use our public lands. And that is before our very eyes now changing with an administration that has absolutely broken down. And I'm not saying this, again, in a partisan way, but they have said that's not the purpose of the Fish and Wildlife Service. The purpose of the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Interior is to provide Americans with opportunity and to manage our natural resources. So I personally believe, and I think many of you do, hope that this is a trend that will continue. We need to use our public lands. Americans need to be able to experience the beauty of our public lands, and yes, to be able to hunt and fish on our public lands. It's not a lock up and throw away the key. It's all part of wildlife management. So I'll be back in just a moment with more on the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power, better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix Lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back. It's Charlie Potter, your host on the Great Outdoors show here on WGN Radio. Thank you for listening. I want to switch now to the Forest Preserve districts briefly of northeastern Illinois, in particular Cook County. Stuart Strahl, who is president and CEO of the Chicago Zoological Society, which also oversees the Brookfield Zoo, and an individual that I'm fortunate to say I consider to be a longtime friend, and he's also one of the most experienced individuals on the planet when it comes to zoos and wildlife management. And he wrote a letter the other day, which I wanted to share with you because I think it's important. And it is that the Cook County Forest Preserve commissioners are considering whether or not to place a referendum question on the March 2020 ballot that would increase funding for the Forest Preserves of Cook County, Brookfield Zoo, and the Chicago Botanic Garden to support clean air, water, increase jobs, and educate programs for children, improve habitat for wildlife, aid for capital repairs, and create an improved experience for all the visitors. Stuart Strahl doesn't write these kind of things lightly. This idea of a referendum on the March 20 ballot, which would increase funding for the Forest Preserves of Cook County, is a must-pass referendum. I mentioned last week that we have seen conservation funding in the federal budget go from 4% of the federal budget to less than 1% of the federal budget over the last 40 years. Illinois is no different. We have seen the Department of Natural Resources funding being absolutely emasculated by a series of governors until Governor Rauner and now Governor Pritzker trying to reverse this. But prior to that, we had a 15-year, 18-year period of governors who just simply stole money from the Department of Natural Resources. It's no different here in Cook County. The forest preserves are woefully underfunded. Their percentage of the budget that the forest preserves receive from the county, I'm sure, tracks the national, and there's no data that I have for it, but I wouldn't imagine it would be different, tracks the national and the state of Illinois. Downward funding as a percentage of funds. Our forest preserves tens of thousands of acres, which is one of the things that makes this such a great part of the world, are critical to the future of our being able to enjoy the outdoors in Illinois, northeastern Illinois, where there are far more people than any other part of the state or any really a lot of regions of the country. Our forest preserve districts are a cornerstone to that. And they are They're in need of capital improvements. They're in need of all kinds of things. And the Botanic Garden is clearly one of our great resources. So the idea that we could have a referendum, which would increase funding for the forest preserves, yes, it'll cost each of us a little more money. No, that's not a good idea. But on the other hand, we have to have this. Our forest preserves are one of our treasures. And there are two things that maybe can happen. One is we can get some energy behind this referendum. But the other is we can get the commissioners of Cook County and the other counties to stop treating our outdoor resources as less important to the quality of life as our other needs in the counties. And so the percentage of the budget that the Forest Preserve districts receive, I'm sure, has been declining over time. And that's something that perhaps a little bit of public attention to this can change. So hopefully the referendum that Stuart Strahl mentions will come to pass. It'll be successful, and we will see a renewed interest in protecting our forest preserves and enhancing not only their ability to be used, but they're also their educational opportunities. On that subject of quality of life, before I close down for the morning, I think something extraordinary is happening in Chicago that has received passing attention, but it stares you so straight in the eyes you can't believe it if you go and look at it, and that is the Chicago lakefront. The lake, we know, has risen by several feet. We know it's at its all-time historic high. What we're not considering is the impact that this is going to have on Chicago if the lake is to stay at this level or even rise a little more. Chicago prides itself on the city of getting outside with an incredible lakefront. It's world class. There's no other place in the world, actually, with a city that has so many miles of fabulous lakefront available to the public. And thank you, Daniel Burnham, and thank you, the visionaries of Chicago, for doing that. But right now, it is going underwater. If you take a drive on the Outer Drive, starting all the way down as far down as you can on the south side and taking it all the way up north to Sheridan Road, your eyes are going to, you're not going to believe what you see. When the lake is flat calm, as it was on Thursday evening of this week, not a breath of air, a beautiful fall evening, the walks, the cement walks along the lake are underwater. If we have a northeast breeze of any kind, the water, the waves now lap all the way up to the Outer Drive throughout that, I believe it's 16-mile run. And the public cannot access it. There's no running, there's no biking, there's no hiking, there's no sitting, there's no walking. It's underwater. So millions of people in the city of Chicago and the tourists who come to Chicago who want to enjoy the lakefront are going to be sadly denied that privilege. For the past several decades, we've had, by and large, low lake levels. Now we're experiencing the fastest rise in lake levels in recorded history, and we are at and near the all-time high. This is, and you see cement revetments being put up, concrete revetments all along the Outer Drive to stop the waves from crashing over and coming onto the Outer Drive. The city of Chicago has a serious problem. Its tourism will take an enormous hit if the lakefront is not accessible for all these miles. And those of us who for so long have enjoyed the lakefront in Chicago and used the lakefront in Chicago, we too are going to find that we have lost this connectivity, this treasure of walking along the lakefront or biking or hiking. Oak Street Beach is virtually under, all the beaches are underwater. It's not a question of virtually, they're mostly unusable. And this is something that's happened overnight. 5 years ago, we had record low levels and lots of lakeshore and all these things. Now we're seeing the opposite, and if it continues, it's going to be a different day in Chicago for tourism and those of us who live here. Thanks for listening this morning. I don't have a solution to that, by the way. We don't know what's going on. We just know that we've got a lot of water coming our way. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.